Hey, and welcome to today's episode of Does Not Compute. For those of you listening when this episode is released, just a heads up that Sean and I will be taking a bit of a holiday break after today. We'll be back in action starting on January 9th, 2018. This episode was sponsored by the folks at Storyblocks. Whether you're looking for photos, videos, or audio clips, Storyblocks has you covered. They've got a massive library of over 400,000 images, 150,000 videos, and 100,000 audio clips. Better yet, when you sign up for Storyblocks, you get unlimited access to the entire library for one flat rate. You just pay for a year of access, and then you can use anything you'd like from the Storyblocks library at no additional charge. Storyblocks assets are the perfect thing to spice up web page designs, accompany blog and social posts, and more. Everything in the Storyblocks library is royalty-free and can be used in personal as well as commercial projects. Since you get unlimited library access with your subscription, that means you'll never have to worry about stock media budgets again. Normally, Storyblocks charges $149 per year for access to each part of their library, photos, videos, and audio. As a special offer for Does Not Compute listeners, you can get a year of access to the entire library for just $149 total. Check out storyblocks.com/doesnotcompute to take advantage of this offer. It's only good through December 31st, 2017, so make sure to head to storyblocks.com/doesnotcompute today to learn more and sign up. Another week down, Sean. Another week down.
Are you, like, another week off of my life down?
Well, yeah, that too.
Counting.
You can look at it. You can be like, yeah, I made it through another week. Or you'd be like, oh, another week that I never have again. They're both
true.
Yeah,
both very true. Yeah.
good start. Good positive start to the episode. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Yeah. I think Jamie found me some extra strong melatonin. She's going to make me take it when she gets home. So we'll see. Will I actually get some sleep? We'll find out.
I'll tell you, I have not been sleeping super well this week. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday night, my wife and I slept in our van on the streets of San Francisco, which was a real, real weird experience. I can't recommend it a whole lot. It's not a great place to stealth camp.
That sounds stressful.
Yeah, it was super stressful, especially because I was running a bunch of battery tests. I'll have to send you a screenshot. We put this in show notes, I guess, of the of my spreadsheet. I'm tracking all of our solar input and all our battery drain and all that kind of stuff. And our fridge, we weren't at the point where we were able to sustain our fridge for that amount of time just off solar yet. Mm-hmm. So had to do ice stocking in our fridge. It was quite the experience.
Oh yeah, you did send me a picture, because you're looking at it. It's a mobile screenshot.
Oh yeah, yeah. I took a little. I was in. So Charlene was at work on Thursday, and I was just sitting in the back, watching YouTube videos because I don't have a job right now. So what's like, what else are you gonna do, right? Watching some PUBG, watching some PUBG and Fortnite videos, and yeah. So I just opened up the shades. It took a little shot. It's real weird.
Yeah. I'm the kind of person too. When I'm camping in the past, I just hear things, and then I'm just paranoid about things that I hear. I just think about them.
Yeah, lots of people that walk their dogs get in fights with other people that are walking their dogs. It's interesting.
Like the dogs fight first, or
the dogs fight
first,
and then the people fight about the dogs fighting.
Right. Yeah. Put your dog on a leash. My dog is on a leash.
You need to train that thing. No, you started it.
Right.
But yeah, we had a lot of stuff. We had a bunch of stuff to do in the city. Went to see a movie screening Wednesday night. It was a visual album by this poet I really like, George Watsky. So that was pretty cool. And we went to a friend of the show, Nabil. Hey, buddy.
Oh,
I know you
yeah.
listen.
He does listen.
He got married on Friday. Congratulations again. It was a lovely wedding. So yeah, I mean, it was not the worst trip ever, but it was real weird. It was just surreal because I didn't really have much to do during the days. All the stuff we had scheduled was at night. And so I was just kind of sitting there in a van on the side of the road, trying not to be noticed.
I know that game.
Oh.
Sit in that van.
What was your week like?
What was it like?
Good.
It's just, I don't know. Just a lot to remember. A lot to do. A lot to make and build. And it all kind of runs together. Like, I know the stuff that I'm working on, but it's hard to think back about like each day and what I got done because they just kind of smashed together. Although I did decide this weekend to not work at all. Thanks to everyone who, when I do message you on the weekends, you scold me. Stop it. Stop. Like, it's usually just a new friend of the show, Dave. I don't know if I've mentioned him before. He works at the Outline. They're pretty cool people. And current or past friend of the show. I don't know how to, I think we've talked about him before, but Rockwell, he'll also do the same thing. But yeah, so I decided to just build something for fun and something that I would use this weekend. And it's about 70% there. Would you like to know what it is?
I'm curious.
Okay.
You've got my attention, certainly.
It's been a long-running thread in this show that I can't use to-do apps and they never stick for me. And the same kind of goes for reminder apps. The most apps I've ever used for reminders, or the app I've used the most for reminders, is actually Reminders on iOS. And that works some of the time. And I use it for like small things. Like, hey, remind me to do this tonight or tomorrow. But I was actually inspired by this thing that I can't remember his name right now. One of the creators of React Router made called Plan. You can find it at planner.now.sh. But it's super simple. It just has a couple of to-do lists, the backlist, and what you're working on now. And it also on the side has, you can add reoccurring things that you want to keep doing. Like monthly, I should check into my finances. Every week, I should call this person. And every 2 weeks, I should send this invoice. And you just add them to the side, and then you just see them and remember, right? And it's just super simple. And I find that most apps that I've tried in the way of like reminders or to-dos, they kind of pull you into their ecosystem. Like, if you want to see your to-dos, you got to be having that app open. Or if you want to see your reminders, you got to open the reminders app, right? Just stuff like that. And I've also tried in the past setting like reoccurring reminders in calendar. But then after a while, all the calendar events just blur together in my eyes when I get tired and busy.
Yeah, calendar doesn't work for me for that. I've tried that too. Yeah. Just something about it, I just end up ignoring them.
Yeah, so if anyone steals this idea and launches it before I can, I'll tear your arms off. I'll find you. But it's, like I said, my version's almost there. And basically, it's super simple. It's just an app where you log in. It's just like a web UI. And then you add as many reoccurring reminders as you want, and it either just sends you an email or a text message. And so, for example, add a thing to like send this invoice, and I'll just say, hey, send this to me every 2 weeks at this time. And every 2 weeks, I'll just get an email saying, hey, do the thing. And this, I think, will work for me because it works into my flow. Like, I don't have to go somewhere else to be reminded of this thing, or I don't have to not swipe away notifications because my phone's always getting blown up with push notifications, but I do always see the emails that come into my inbox. That's one place where I find that I don't just sweep things under the rug, or if I'm in a hurry, just ignore it. You know, I always deal with emails coming in. So I figured, why not build something that works into my flow and how I work, as opposed to trying to adjust my flow to fit with something else.
Totally. Are you an inbox zero type these days?
No, I keep things in my inbox that I need to remember. Or things that you need to do at a certain point in time. So I don't know, for the past few months, I've just been using mail because I was having all sorts of weird little problems with Polymail, and I was just sick of it. So I've just been using mail, and the flags stuff in mail is not great. You know, you can either unflag or flag something. So there's nothing like that allows me to schedule things to be resent to me in a way, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I keep things around, some things around in my inbox, but I don't keep everything around. I definitely make sure that it's tidied up and I don't have tons of stuff laying around. It's just important items that I need to remember that stay in there.
Yeah, I use my email inboxes as like one half of my to-do list. And then I just have a note that I've pinned in bare that I've been using this for several months now, probably mm-hmm. like half a year at this point. And it's just a to-do note, and it's just a checklist in there. And then I just know to check that every day, and I just look at it. Because I always have Bear open, because I'm always doing some kind of note for something or other anyhow.
Right, yeah.
And it's always pinned to the top, so it's just always, it's right there. And that's been working out pretty well for me, kind of that combo of email stuff where other people, that's basically how other people can assign things to me. And then I can assign things to myself in Bear.
Yeah, see, like that works well for to-dos, because I do something really similar where I have just a note, or sometimes it's in Bear, sometimes it's in an empty document in my text editor. A lot of times, actually, just in an empty document in text editor. But I find that for recurring things and things that aren't necessarily what do I need to do in the next couple of days, that doesn't really work for me because I end up moving it somewhere else and then forget about it anyway. So I'm hoping that this will help me, and I think it will because I'm always emailing myself stuff anyway. So I think that it'll prod me to remember to do things, remember to do life things more often than I do.
Yeah, recurring stuff has always been an issue for me. This sounds like a pretty cool concept. I might have to
just simple
bug you for an
emails
invite or something.
Text
like
messages. I'm going to use Mailgun or whatever. Most of them have X thousand number of emails for free per month, so it's not going to cost me anything. And Twilio is not that expensive, really. You know, if I wanted to do text message notifications, because that could also be helpful. But yeah, I mean, I'm making it in a way that anyone could sign up for it. So it's not just going to be like a private tool. I figured like if it's useful for me, it might be useful for someone else. I'm just going to put it out there and let people use it. And if it works, cool. If it doesn't, you know, that's also cool. My mom has actually been working on a reminder type app. It's a little bit different, but for my sister and her kids, actually. So they can kind of smooth out the chaos that is getting several children ready for school and ready for sleep.
Yes.
Every night. So she's building that. And I said, hey, you know, I'm going to make this API. If you want to, you know, I'll give you access to the API and you can build a Swift app for it for fun. She said, okay. So that was kind of another motivation, was to put up an API that, you know, I could help her consume in a Swift app. But it's been fun. It's just a Phoenix API. And I'll probably just make a Vue app, maybe a Nuxt app for the front end. It's real simple.
That's awesome, man. So I resigned from NestNotes about a month ago, as I'm sure, as I know you know, and as I'm sure most of our listeners know at this point. But the day I resigned, I turned to my wife and I said, I'm really excited to have all this time off, right? It's been so long since I've had a good long break with no stress. And it has. It's been fantastic. It's been so great. And I just feel awesome now. But I was like, I know what's going to happen is by the time mid-December hits, I know I'm going to get antsy and I'm going to have to make something on the computer. And it's December 15th, I wake up and I'm like, oh man, okay, I got it. Know what it is. And now I have to start working on it. So I've actually started cranking a little bit on my very first Elixir app, Sean. It's time. It's past time. But now it is time.
How many patterns are you matching now? Like 20, 25?
So I haven't been writing any code. It's all been architecture so far. And this is actually an idea I had a while ago, and I actually have some designs for that I'm trying to hunt down. So this is, it's a pretty simple idea. Basically, it's a collaborative whiteboard, and it is called Whiteboard, but it's spelled FFF board because I'm a nerd. But friend of the show, Zach Kelly, did some wonderful designs and a wonderful logo for it. So I'm actually working on getting those from him, and I'm going to start building this thing. I'm excited. It's like the perfect use case. It's got a strong real-time component. It's got all the standard kind of web app stuff that you have, all the cruddy stuff and all the user things and all that. So I think it'll be like a really nice, well-rounded first project. I'm really stoked.
Yes. It sounds like it. So I was talking to a friend of the show, Kevin, the other night, and he was talking about branching out into a couple of different languages and checking things out. And we were just talking about that. And I said, like, the only advice I really had to give him was, if you're going to do that, that's good, but pick something that you've built in the past. So that way you remove half of the equation. Like, you remove the architectural equation. You remove, what am I going to build? You remove, how is this going to be structured kind of from the problem? And then that really forces you to be able to focus on syntax and ecosystem stuff.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, I have a really solid grasp on exactly how I want this to work. And I've built this actual thing before. I've built working prototypes of it. And it's like, I don't need to figure out how to make this thing. I need to figure out how to make it in Elixir, in Phoenix.
Right.
That's the part I want to challenge myself to learn. So I'm really, really excited. But mostly I just thought it was funny that I was like, I know mid-December is going to hit and I'm going to get the itch. It'll be back. And it is. And I'm very glad that it's back.
It always happens. I think you'll have fun on that. I think that I think that you'll like Elixir a lot, or at least I hope you do. That's something that I talked to Kevin a lot about the other night as well, was he was asking me how going from an object-oriented language and stack, you know, in Rails, how my thinking changed and how I approach building applications and stuff using a functional language like Elixir. And it was interesting because I don't know that I've actually sat down and thought about it. I mean, so like I hear people say data in, data out, you know, that's what it is. And then we talked about maybe last week or a couple weeks ago how web apps are almost like really complicated spreadsheets. And yeah, that's what I mean. I was thinking more about it like that. And I think I said something to you in Discord this week, right? About how I almost feel like things feel simpler to me or not as complex because I'm not trying to take this data and push it into a representation of it, of itself. I'm just putting it in the database and thinking about my application as being the data that goes into the spreadsheets. Like my application is now just like transforms, you know, I get users, it goes through a bunch of transformations and it goes into the storage. I get data out of the storage and then it goes through transformations and the data goes to the user. That's about as simple as it could get, right?
Yeah, man, spreadsheets are the best. They're really great. It's just kind of incredible when you start to think about things in that way, because basically every web app, at least ones that aren't, you know, games or anything,
mm-hmm.
it's really just a bunch of tables in a spreadsheet and connecting them in different ways and then displaying that and then getting data from, presenting a nice way for users to enter data into that spreadsheet.
Yep.
And then taking that and then shoving it in there. And that really is all it is. It's so, I don't know, it's freeing to think about it that way, certainly.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that's a simplification, but then you kind of step back and you can see the bigger picture. And that's what I like about thinking that way. You don't get caught up in like, how is this being modeled? How is this being represented in my system? Really, you just have to figure out how is it going to be stored in the end. And then from there, everything kind of springs to life. That's like the main difference is I don't have to try to figure out, like I don't have to think about classes and how many different ways can this look and how many different types of this thing are there? Because then, you know, I have to think about inheritance and, you know, what kind of class methods should this have? I don't think about that. I've just been writing functions. So I just start writing functions. And if suddenly some of the, like most of them are acting on a similar thing, a similar subject, I just wrap it in a module.
Yeah. Yeah. But even outside of actual programming, I mean, we've talked about this before with Jack McDade's thing, Wilderborn, where they actually offer spreadsheet design or spreadsheet development, I guess, as a service, as a consulting service. And I love that, and I'm doing that more in my own stuff, just because I am able to save time on things where I might have previously built out like a single serving kind of tool or something in JavaScript to do something. Now I often find myself turning to a spreadsheet instead, and I make the spreadsheet in, you know, 15 minutes, 30 minutes or whatever, and I'm up and running, entering data into it.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like the developer equivalent of prototyping. I guess.
Right. Yeah.
Only the prototype is shippable and you're using it and it works fine in the real world. That's pretty cool. It was just a really good conversation that we had. We're talking about that stuff because he's been a PHP developer. He's, you know, he's using Laravel, he's building stuff and he's learning and growing, which is awesome. It's just funny when we really start talking about stuff, how different some of the concepts of like object-oriented programming or functional programming is to him, because he's never kind of experienced that. And I think case in point was when I showed him, I showed this to you too, but it's a pattern going around. There's a couple of articles I'll link where I kind of learned this from, but I'll link them in the show notes. But essentially, in pretty much every app I've ever made, there's an API endpoint where you can list resources, but then you can also filter and sort them and just manipulate the data that you get that comes back to you, right? And so there are countless libraries and countless tools that you can use to iterate over the parameters that you accept and turn those into meaningful queries for the database to return the correct information. And in Elixir, there are a number of tools and libraries that you could add to your project. But one of the coolest things I saw was just a really simple pattern, and it only takes three functions. So in Phoenix, when you have an API endpoint that takes it takes the parameters and gives you a map, or that's roughly equivalent to an object. So you get an object of key value pairs. So the key values being, you know, the name of the query string and the value of the query string. And all it is it's just a function that takes the map and it runs reduce on the map. And then you have as many functions as you need to in the middle that match a certain key name, like name or keywords or email or something. And then it takes the value and turns that into a SQL query. So for every map that you have, or every key value pair you have in the map, it just turns that essentially into one SQL query and then returns it into whatever function you called it in. So in my case, I can string as many queries as I want, like, for example, product, where all the products are published, where they belong to a store that's been approved, where products that haven't been deleted. And then I run the function that reduces the map. And then I run repo.all, and the queries stack up and return me the information that I need.
Yeah, you did send that to me the other day, and it's so cool. It's such an awesome way of thinking about that. I love that it's, and the functions that are actually doing the work are so simple.
Each one just
makes sense. You look at it, it's like, oh yeah, that I understand that, and it's clear what that's doing and why it's doing it.
Yeah, and that's one thing Kevin asked me was. One thing that Kevin asked me a lot is that, you know, why, what's the benefit of pattern matching and overloading functions? Why, you know, why isn't it just as easy to write conditionals? And my answer was, well, I noticed that a lot of times when I have functions with conditionals, the function bodies are just longer, because then there's a diversion of what the function's doing, right? There's two outcomes at that point. And when I'm writing, when I tend to like overload functions, that means that I can define a function with the same name. It just accepts different parameters. When I do that, the functions that I have typically just do one thing. So they're easier to test, but they're also easier just to look at, because there's not a branch. There's not a conditional that changes the direction that the code is working in those functions. And the same thing is for the slow pattern, because like you said, the functions are so simple. You just write a function like filter data set that takes a string of name and a value of whatever you assign it to. And you know by looking at that function that this is operating on the name column of whatever resource we're filtering.
Right. So it makes it easier to test. It makes it easier to look at. And then it also makes it easier to change in the future. Because mm-hmm. if just by looking at the function definition, you can see exactly what it's going to receive and how it deals with it right there without having to worry about, okay, so what are all the other possible paths that this might take? And you right. know you know that you're only affecting the outcome of that very specific function.
Yeah.
It's just a lot safer to change.
Yeah, it's super safe to change. And especially the way I'm doing it. I guess like if you're not using a lot of the libraries that I've seen, or a few of them for the Elixir, what they do is they kind of distill configuration they want you to put the configuration in one place. So I think it's one called FilterX, where you kind of build up a data structure that says, these are what I'm looking for, these are what are allowed, and these are what the values they should be. And so that kind of pigeonholes you into putting that config into one place, because if you're configuring it more than once for say a product, that might feel weird, right? It might feel like you're duplicating yourself, when in reality there probably are perfectly valid reasons for having more than one configuration, because maybe one is in the context of a user that only should have access to public information, and one's in the context of a store owner that should be able to access all the information. And since I'm not using a library, I don't try to distill this stuff into one module. Or if I were using Ruby, I'd probably try to make like a search class, right? It's just functions that I drop into a file, and they're not complicated. So I can type them out every time. It takes 30 seconds. And it doesn't feel like they're being duplicated, because they're strictly tailored to the task at hand.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just really impressed with the pattern. I'm excited to actually get to kind of sink my teeth into using some of this stuff instead of just reading about it and hearing about it from you.
I think you'll like it a lot. I think that you can get really far with just a few functions. You know, everyone always talks about map, reduce, and filter, and those are like the powerhouse. You can do so much with those, just those three functions. And that's, I guess I'm not really challenging myself, but I'm trying to figure out like what all I can do with just a couple of those functions at a time without having to reach for an external dependency or another library, or without trying to extract things into a more complicated setup, like pushing stuff into a reusable module, where instead it can just be a couple of functions and those do the job fine. They're isolated, they're testable. And when they change, they only change, they don't change other things elsewhere because they're not being reused in a bunch of places.
Man, I just want to start writing right now. I just want to
reducing,
mapping and reducing. Oh my gosh.
Reducing. Yeah. I was pretty excited about it. So I showed it to Rockwell and he was like, you can take it a step further, because the original solution was taking the map and it was converting it to a list. And then it was reducing the list, but it turns out you can reduce a map down. Internally, it probably converts it into a list, I guess, but you didn't even need to do that extra conversion. It's like the functions for this each just have one line in the body, which I think is hilarious. It's so simple.
So how are you handling, earlier you mentioned the case of like a user and an admin maybe having access to query different things or whatever. How are you actually handling that right now?
So I just have different namespaces. The whole kind of marketplace has two main namespaces. So it's like marketplace.manage and marketplace.browse. And any of the controllers that are operating in the normal, I can't say normal, but the non-admin.
Like the storefront.
Yeah, anything that's not /admin, the controllers only use methods from marketplace.browse.
Right.
So like you might have marketplace.browse.stores or marketplace.browse.products. And when you do something like products.list, then it only returns publicly available information, and the same for stores. And then obviously, you know, when you do manage marketplace.manage.stores, there's extra code in there too that, you know, goes ahead and verifies that the user's logged in, the user has permission to access its information and stuff like that. So, I mean, you could also argue that doing it that way is a little bit more performant, because on the front end, since you know it's just publicly accessible information, you don't have to run through a bunch of unnecessary code to get the result to the user.
Yeah, it's just less to think about. Like, if you know that an API endpoint can only ever return quote unquote safe values for what you want to display, then you just don't have to think about it ever.
Yep. And it's also a lot easier to think about what you're working on in that context, because it's super isolated. So I know that if I'm working on a bug that's happening on the customer side or the front end, I know it's happening in one place, and I know that the code literally couldn't be the code from control panel or the code from like marketplace.manage or anything else literally couldn't be causing that to happen. It can only happen in one spot.
Man, I really like not having to think about things, or at least having less things to think about.
Yeah, I mean, it comes with the trade-off. So I should probably write a blog post about this. But I came up with a different way to structure my context and things. And I think it took it one step too far in the separating things direction, because now I have lots of duplicated schema files, which isn't necessarily bad. It just means that it takes more work for me to build out new features. And again, that's not bad. And maybe that's good because it forces me to slow down. But it really, what it means is that each piece, like marketplace browse, marketplace manage, control panel, what other, I have like telemetry, which sends notifications, and there's, I'd have to pull the code up right now because my brain is melted from last week. But it just means that everything is super isolated and super scoped to that portion. So for example, if an email goes out and some of the product images aren't in the right order, because that's a super important thing, the store owners can order all the product images, because obviously they all have one that they want to be the front. If some of the products aren't rendering with the correct image first, I know exactly where that's happening. It literally can only be happening in one place, because that relationship is defined only in that place. So I have many schema files that map to the same database tables, if that makes sense. So like marketplace.manage.store is one schema file, and marketplace.browse.store is a separate schema file. It just so happens that the browse one doesn't even have any change sets. So you can't use that schema to actually change any information. It's read-only.
I mean, honestly, that doesn't even sound like a trade-off to me. That sounds like a really beneficial thing.
It's just a pain sometimes, though, because like I want to write some tests. Oh God, I gotta make like six schemas. Like most of the time, it's great because, like you said, it's super organized. It's super scoped. The schema files only include change set functions. And if you're not familiar, change set is how you create changes to data with Ecto. So most of my schema files in the app don't even have change sets defined because it's purely read only. It's purely mapping data from a column in a database to a struct. That's all it does. It's just sometimes that I don't really want to have to redefine these six relationships. It takes me 5 minutes and I just shut up. But you know what I mean? It's just one of those things where
it feels like an insurmountable task.
Yeah. And what's interesting, I noticed, like, I started adding other tools. Like I was using Ex Machina, which is very similar to Factory Girl for generating test data. But I noticed that when I started splitting things up and separating things like this, I don't even need Ex Machina because I don't have like a lot of complex cases where I have to run all these generators. It's really just, okay, well, I'm working on this piece of information, so I just need to create this struct and work on that, you know? So, I have to go through and clean up a lot of that stuff, but it actually simplified things. It made changing and touching things take longer and more spread out, but it simplified the conceptual load and the testing load, I think.
That's fantastic. Man, I'm just really excited to get working on this. I need those design files.
Yeah, I'll have to show you that. I'm happy that out of the gate you're like, this doesn't suck, or that idea is terrible. Because I haven't talked about it a whole lot. I talked about it with Dave, who I mentioned earlier, and Rockwell, obviously, and a little bit with Mikhail as well. And they, you know, they just had questions about it because all three of them work with Elixir. Dave works with Elixir full time. And they just had some questions about it. But I'm interested to hear what you think about it because, like I said, it is a little bit more work. But like if you blow up the telemetry service, that's like not like the customers won't even know. Like it doesn't affect anything. It's pretty awesome.
That's fantastic. So I should probably do an update on our internet stuff.
Yeah.
We are like a week in, and I have, I think last time I talked to you, I had just gotten it, right?
Yes.
This is the unlimited vill service. It's been working fantastic still. It's been great. We've used like 60 or 70 gigs, I think, at this point. So we're consuming a fair bit of data.
It's on YouTube.
It's YouTube. I've been playing games on it. Like I've been able to play Fortnite and Brawlhalla, which is like a kind of like Super Smash Brothers, but on Mac and PC.
Nice.
It's really fun. It's free to play as well. Everybody check out Brawlhalla.
I saw that in Discord and I didn't know what it was, but then I don't remember why I didn't message you about it.
Yeah, definitely use a controller for it. I'm using a DualShock 4, but it's really cool. I like it. We should try it later if you get it.
Yeah, I picked up Overwatch. It's pretty okay.
I haven't been able to get into it yet. Maybe I'll have to try that with you at some point.
It's only my brother because it's just hilarious. He's entertaining. But anyhow, careful, Mr. Pi is going. He's coming for you and your data. Your 60 gigabytes.
Who's Mr. Pi?
Mr. Pi, the FCC chairman.
Oh gosh, I haven't been following any of that this week. What's the deal? Some bad stuff happened, I heard, huh?
Obviously, we all knew that was going to happen. Who's surprised about that? I derailed that convo. Okay, so your internet, you're using YTube. Fine.
It's been fantastic. It's been working great for YouTube. It's been working great for, like I said, playing games, multiplayer games, even pretty fast paced Twitch kind of stuff. It's just been awesome. So for anybody who's looking to do off the grid internet sort of stuff like this, tentative recommendation. I'll keep updating on it though. Because I know it's hard. It's really hard to find info on this kind of stuff. So hopefully that helps some people.
Yeah, and everyone uses the same terminology too, which doesn't make it any easier.
Right.
Yeah. Like half of them say unlimited, but they're lying. Like everyone. Like I said, we talked about this last time. But yeah, if you have any pointers or pitfalls, I guess, things that you learned about looking for a provider, that might be helpful to some people too.
Yeah. So there's a really good, I want to get the name right here, RV Mobile. There's this place called the RV Mobile Internet Resource Center. It's just rvmobileinternet.com. We'll get that in the show notes. These folks are pretty good. They write a lot of articles about all this and review things. A lot of their content is paywalled, which I have mixed feelings on, but I actually did pay for a year of access to their stuff, and their newsletters have been pretty helpful for me. So that is, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot to all this stuff, and I've researched this for hours and hours, dozens of hours at this point. Hopefully it all continues to work because I need the internet.
Yeah. You could find a Starbucks that's just on the edge of a forest, and you could park in the forest.
get like a Wi-Fi range booster. Yeah. We probably will get one of those at some point.
There is a Starbucks in Tifton, Georgia. If you want to head down there, it's like super nice and close to an underpass that you could park in, I'm sure.
Mm. Nice. Just what I always wanted to do, park in an underpass and work.
And there's an Olive Garden next door to it. So you can get those breadsticks. Oh.
Our thanks to Storyblocks once again for their support of Does Not Compute. Storyblocks has a huge library of stock media, including photos, videos, and audio clips. Better yet, when you subscribe, you get unlimited access to everything in their library. No additional fees for each item you download. That means you'll never have to think about stock budgets again. They've got a very special offer for DNC listeners. You can get a full year of access to the Storyblocks library for only $149. This offer ends December 31st, 2017, so head over to storyblocks.com/doesnotcompute today to learn more and sign up.